I'm sure glad we're not recording right now.
I would hate for people to hear this crap.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Where are my pants?
Welcome to another edition of Jedi and Germs on the Jazz, a weekly podcast brought to you by TornbySports.com. I'm Alan Zog, the Jedi. He's John English, the Germs guy. Hello, John.
True. Hiya.
How are you?
I'm swell.
Ha, very swell. That's awesome.
Dandy and peachy.
Sweet. So what are we so peachy about?
Well, we got our new Star Wars behind-the-scenes video, which allowed me to get some new screenshots, so that was nice.
Oh, yes. And there are a killer amount of screenshots that came out of that. Absolutely. Yes, that was awesome. And I got to see Ant-Man 2 nights ago.
Is it good? Because from a distance, it looked bad, and as it's gotten closer, it's looked like it's probably good.
Like I said the other night, and you responded to me when I did so, it's better than Age of Ultron.
That's a good thing, because I liked Avengers 2, but it hasn't really, I don't know, it was fine. Glad I saw it. It hasn't really resonated with me as time has passed.
Yes. Yes, and I liked it, but I liked the first Avengers better, and Guardians of the Galaxy is still my favorite Marvel movie to date, but I would definitely have to put Ant-Man up at the top of my list because after seeing it, yes, I'd put it right there alongside Guardians of the Galaxy on my list of must-see Marvel movies. It's probably one of my very favorites.
Wow.
Yes. Yes, everybody needs to see it. It's got the comedy element. It's got everything about it. I'm going to be writing a review, and I'll have it posted on watchplayread.com before Friday so everybody can go out and read it. But it's a must-see movie. Everybody needs to go see it, definitely. So, we got Jazz to talk about, too. A lot of Summer League action going on.
Yeah. And they threw some money at J.J. O'Brien, which I was surprised by.
So was I. Especially since I barely even know his name.
Yeah, I never really noticed him in the parts of games that I've caught. I was just looking at his stats, and it looks like he had one good game on the 13th. 13 points, 3 steals. There must be some other little things that they're enjoying. Some of the guys who've watched all of the games in their entirety could probably speak more to it. This kind of strikes me as a D-Boast move, where they have someone they like a little bit, so they throw money at him, and if he does anything for them in preseason, great. And if not, it's no real skin off their backs. Maybe they're just kind of preserving him for the D League for Idaho.
Is this one of those partially guaranteed contracts too, or is this a guaranteed 2-3 year deal?
Oh no, it's partially guaranteed.
Okay. And he plays what, guard, swingman?
Yeah, he's like a 6'7" small forward type. Played at San Diego State. Nothing really about him jumps out at me, but they apparently like how he fits in with the team, so they're gonna keep him around. Now, with the Jazz roster slots, I really don't know where he fits. I can't comprehend him making the team unless we have a lot of injuries in a row, because I would think other guys with non-guaranteed deals like Chris Johnson and maybe even Bryce Cotton or Jack Cooley, I would think would be ahead of him.
Right.
Or even Grant Jarrett. They seem to have some interest in really making sure they can get something out of Grant Jarrett since he was part of that trade. Injuries have kind of hampered him in summer league, so I don't know. But when you kind of space it out by position, I mean, point guard, we have up to 5 if we wanted them. Shooting guard, you have Burks, Hood, And then probably Johnson. Small forward, you have Hayward, Ingles, and Millsap. Power forward, you have Favors, Booker, and Lyles. Center, you have Gobert and Plyce, and maybe Cooley. I mean, all your 15 slots can already adequately be filled. So I don't know. The J.J. O'Brien thing has to be some kind of Idaho move, and then if they get two or three injuries, then maybe they can call him up. Something like that.
An insurance spot at the wing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I lost about half of what you said there. Not because we lost you, but because the headphones I was wearing suddenly faded out and I couldn't hear you. So, but I agree. Everything you just said, I agree. We'll just, everybody, Germ said, everybody just agree. Everybody in favor, say aye. And all the hands in the room go up. We're good. Okay, so...
Wisdom be on your ears.
So, what else has impressed you from Summer League thus far? I mean, granted, we watched Salt Lake last week. I think when we recorded last week, we were about done with Salt Lake. So, since they've gone into Vegas, what have you seen... Aside from Bryce Cotton, okay, Bryce Cotton has pretty much dominated every game, but aside from Bryce Cotton, what has surprised you?
What has surprised me? I can't think of anything that's really surprised me. It's gone about what I thought. I would say that if you were just watching Summer League games and you didn't know who any of the Jazz players were, and I told you to point out their rookie lotto pick, I don't think most people would have been able to pinpoint number 41 as that pick. Lyles has kind of blended into the competition, and that's what I thought would happen. I didn't think he would have that noticeable a summer league. He's had a fine summer league, but he's had one where I just don't see him getting much playing time this season. I anticipate the Jazz are going to try to make the playoffs this season, and therefore I anticipate his development is going to contain quite a few DNP CD games. So I think he's one they will patiently string along, and I guess it's okay that we don't see much from him over the next year or two. And if he develops quicker than that, great, but right now I can't say I have a lot of faith in that.
What are your thoughts on his performance in Summer League? I mean, aside from what you said, because if I were to pick apart a couple of things of a little bit of what I've seen, he seems to have very good passing abilities for a big man. And I've seen folks across social media draw comparisons with Carlos Boozer, and I have to kind of agree. He's got those quick moves down low in the post, and even when he's able to dribble by guys, that could remind you very much of the way Carlos could do that. Am I right in that assumption?
Yeah. No, I've been hesitant with the Boozer comparison just because Boozer, he had a stud rookie year, and so his numbers were there immediately.
Right.
And I guess it's just because of I would say I see that element of it. Lyle's personality is a lot different than Boozer, and so, you know, I guess that's where my hesitation is in comparing him to that. I think Lyle's tries more on defense.
Yes.
And I think that will come along. Lyle's has flashes.
He seems to have more range than Boozer did as well. Now, granted, when I've watched him shoot the three, it seems like he's not looked great from really far out, but it seems to me that he has a little bit more range than Boozer did.
Well, Boozer wasn't asked to have more range. I mean, the NBA now is just different than what it was 8 or 9 years ago.
Correct.
Boozer was never asked to do that, and Boozer had a decent mid-range shot. He would throw up some rainbows sometimes, but he didn't need to have range. Now everyone has to try to shoot the three, and you know, they'll try to develop that. They'll work on that. Hopefully he can do it. I haven't really liked his shot mechanics.
Right.
A lot of his shots have been kind of flat and short, and you know, they'll work on that, but that's, you know, that's definitely not there yet. He's got a lot of work to do in that regard.
Some of them seem like his shots at times were rushed. And I don't know whether that was self-inflicted because he either held on to the ball too long or he got given the ball with not enough time on the shot clock. But he did seem very rushed in a few times that he took shots.
Yeah, maybe it's nerves. Maybe it's 19. But yeah, there have been times where he does that. And when he does that, that's when his shot gets flatter and he's hit the front of the rim a lot. And I think, you know, that's just, you know, where he has a lot of work to do. That's why he's not going to be that much of a contributor this year.
Right.
There's a lot of things he needs to do. One thing I have watched for, and I've noticed every once in a while, because Locke really pointed this out, was how good Lyles is at making quick decisions.
Yes.
And I will see that. I will see as soon as his guy shoots, and I'll see that quick decision making where he kind of hangs back because he knows that the long rebound's going to be there, or he'll start bolting because it's going to be a short rebound and he wants to be there for the outlet pass. I've noticed that with him.
Well, and that goes back to what I mentioned about his passing ability. He does not hesitate on the pass, and whether it's on the whether it's on the low post or the high post, either time he had the ball in a few of the passes he made, they were quick passes, they were crisp passes. He didn't hesitate on them, and he just threw them. They went, and it to what you just said. Yeah, he's very quick with his decision making.
Yeah, where he's going to thrive in the second unit is his decision-making and his ability to keep the ball moving and be able to get other people open shots.
So other than those observations, anything else you draw from Summer League so far? Jazz lost again tonight, by the way, for those just catching up. I don't even know how this format they've got going on works out. They've got some sort of playoff format, but anything else draws out to you? Or Devin, you're listening in. Anything catches you guys' attention otherwise in Summer League that we haven't talked about?
You know, there's stuff going on with other teams. Miles Turner's looking great. And, you know, I think he's always going to be one we're going to look at and go, oh, man, he's only one away. You know, there's been the expected play of guys like Towns. Okafor and Porzingis was a highlight the other day. You know, there's a lot of fun stuff in Summer League. There's a lot of stuff people can catch. There are a lot of guys who are probably putting up great stats, but when the time comes, they'll probably just fade when the actual season starts. There's a lot of fool's gold in Summer League.
Right.
But, you know, doesn't matter. It's still fun.
Yeah.
I would say of the point guard play, Hanlon. I really like Hanlon in interviews. And he's just okay in Summer League. And so if he makes an NBA team, I don't think it's going to be with the Jazz. I just don't see where there's room. I think Cotton is definitely playing ahead of him. And with the Neto signing, Neto's ahead of Cotton. So even if you say Hanlon can place him too, I just can't see him making the team.
So let's talk about, for a second, guys that are on contract. Which, by the way, news yesterday broke that Plyce has signed a long-term deal with the Jazz, which we expected. We kind of figured that was coming along, and I think Jody mentioned it on the show last week that it was something to be anticipated. But so now our guys on contract, we've got, and these are guaranteed contracts, we've got, obviously, Burke, Hayward, Favors, Gobert. Did they pick up Booker's option? They did, right? So they've got Booker.
Did, yeah.
You've got Hood. Who am I miss? Exum. So that's 8. You add Neto. You add Plyce. That's 10. Who else am I missing?
I thought Millsap was guaranteed, but I'm seeing reports now that maybe that's not the case. Hoops Hype only has him for 1 year, and I thought he had struck a 2-year deal last year, but now I'm not really seeing anything to back that up.
Well, and assuming he's back, then that's 11, 11 guys, which means for fall camp, you're still about what, six spots short. So any one of these guys now, but then when the season starts, you've got to have that trimmed down to 14, 15. So still four or five guys. Who are the guaranteed contracts, or who are the guys that we see get deals?
Well, 12 are guaranteed.
Right.
And if Millsap's guaranteed, that's 13. So then you have partial deals with Johnson, Jarrett, Cooley, and Cotton.
Right.
And now O'Brien. So if you have 13 guys, if Millsap is guaranteed, there's 13 guys right there. So you figure you probably only want to start the season with 14. But even if they do give it, if they do two, then you're choosing between Cotton, Cooley, Jarrett, Johnson, O'Brien, and maybe somebody else. So of those guys, I would think with Plyce signed, you know, I could see. I just don't know how Jarrett makes it unless enough of his deal's guaranteed that they feel like they've put enough money in him, they want to see more.
I'm still wondering where Cooley fits in. I mean, you've got four big guys on contract now. Is it four? Did I count right? Yeah, you've got Booker, Gobert, Favors, and Plyce. So
Lyles.
And Lyles. So, yeah, there's your, yeah. And let's not forget at the wing, I forgot Joe Ingles. So there's your 13 you just spoke of, assuming Millsap's that guy. But so you've got five bigs right now. I'm not sure there's a spot for Cooley at this point in time.
I question that too. If you're signing Cooley, you're signing him as a third center when you already have two other centers and three power forwards. So, you know, I don't know how much need they really have for Cooley. He's another guy who's going to be insurance, probably play for Idaho. You know, a lot of people like him, and he's had a pretty good summer league. But it's just a matter of where do you fit. I mean, Plyce is the intention in signing Plyce. Plyce, I still only expect to be like a 10-minute a night kind of guy.
But you have to, you know, go. You have to believe that Plyce is a guy who can immediately contribute. He's not one of those guys you have to work into the offense, into the system. I would think that with his veteranship in overseas, he ought to be able to just come right in and immediately contribute.
Yeah, Plyce was in the same draft as Hayward and Favors. Trying to remember, I think he's 25. So he has all that experience overseas. So he's not someone that you gotta wait a long time on. He's a Joe Ingles type rookie, where sure he's a rookie, but he has enough overseas experience that it really shouldn't take him that long to get used to what he's doing. And Neto the same way to a lesser degree. Neto's a little younger, but he has his experience. He's going to be the third guard, so. There'll probably be nights where Neto's a DMP. Just depends how he plays, how X-Men Burke play preseason. I don't anticipate any trades before opening day. And so now they've invested in Neto. He signed a 3-year deal. So they're expecting something. And they're going to keep their roster flexible with your three point guards. But yeah, Neto's the third guy, and so that leaves Cotton out. I don't see how you keep a fourth point guard.
And if what I hear about Neto is true, you now have three point guards, and this is the caveat here is that Exum's getting better, but you now have three point guards that can't shoot the ball.
I know.
I mean, that folks, that's a problem. I mean, no, I recognize the Jazz, it specifically Quinn, believes in the obviously the three guys he's got. Otherwise, they wouldn't be doing this. But, you know, it, obviously big things are expected from Burke going into this season. Big things. He's got to improve. But so does Exum. You know, second year in the NBA, we've got to have shooting at that point guard position. You have to.
All of them are... expected to make improvements in shooting, and I've heard arguments on why each of them should have a better shooting year this year.
Right.
Exum's supposed to be more aggressive. Burke's supposed to be able to not have the ball so often in the last few seconds of the clock. Neto's going to have someone to work on his shooting mechanics, and I'm trying to remember from Locke's interview with Neto, but he talked about how Neto's shooting was really bad when he went to this tournament, and then he was able to work with a coach, and he got his three up to 40%, and then he went off for some other tournament, and his shooting went down again, as though he just kind of forgot what he had been taught. And maybe when he's in a year-round NBA system, he'll be able to remember those things that help him be a more efficient shooter. So, you know, a lot of our hopes and a lot of our improvements could be on, as long as our point guards can hit shots, everything else is there for us to make the next leap.
Yeah. I mean, and you have to have improvement at the point guard position shooting wise, because your next best option as far as shooting becomes Rodney Hood and Gordon Hayward and Alec Burks. And those three, while I believe they can carry the load, you'd got to have contributions offensively from that main point guard position. You have to. And so I hope, I agree. I hope to see, you know, I want to see Exum be more assertive and more aggressive. But on that same token, I'd like him to continue. I think we saw during the season this last year him hitting shots that maybe weren't expected to be hit. And I hope as the season picks up this year that we're going to see improvements from him from downtown as well.
Yeah.
So, all right. What other things are reaching out to you right now? What are the things you want to talk about?
Well, let's do a little more around the NBA stuff.
Okay.
I want to talk about, let's look at the other teams in the West that the Jazz need to be better than in order to make the playoffs.
All right.
And I wanted to start with Sacramento. That has been fascinating. Sacramento, you have the fallout between George Karl and DeMarcus Cousins before the season even gets started.
And it
seems they've added some strange pieces. You have Rajon Rondo. Kosta Kufis has signed up to be a backup big man, which I think is a good signing. Marco Bellinelli. They traded for a couple guys from the Sixers that I don't know. Luka Mitrovic, and I can't remember the other guy, but you know, I don't know how big of contributors they're going to be, but Sacramento seems to be making a lot of moves to try to improve themselves and try to make the playoffs this year. I don't think it's enough to make the playoffs, but they do this every year. They make moves where they're kind of going for broke and it doesn't work. But
I think a large part
they're going to try again.
I think a large part of their success hinges on George Karl's relationship, not just with Cousins, but it would seem that his relationship with the front office there in Sacramento, which I think we need to remind everybody who the general manager is of that team, and that is who, John?
Oh, who is their GM?
I believe it is former Sacramento center and Lakers center.
Oh, that's right. Vladdy.
And it seems to me that there's a little bit of a disconnect there between Vladdy and George Karl. Vladdy seems
amazing.
Yeah, right. Vladdy seems to like DeMarcus Cousins a lot, which I guess from big man to big man, I can understand that, but That relationship's going to be interesting as the season progresses, because I've heard and seen things pop out there that George Karl might be on the hot seat before he's even started his job. So that Sacramento team's got a whole closet full of skeletons that are eventually going to display themselves out on the court. So you're right. That's probably not a team to reckon with much for the playoffs.
Well, when you leak that you're aggressively trying to move him, I mean, how good can your relationship be with him? And when you have guys like Rondo and Rudy Gay and Cousins all there on the same team, you're going to need to be a masterful coach to manage those egos anyway. Well, Karl has an ego of his own, And, you know, if they start the season 3-7, it's going to be all over again, and it's going to be another dumpster fire year for Sacramento.
And that said, you know, George Karl, aside from his years in Milwaukee, which weren't great, he did coach Michael Redd, but aside from those years in Milwaukee, he did have to coach some strong personalities in Seattle, and then he did so again in Denver. So it's not like he hasn't dealt with, you know, these strong personalities that he's had to temper a little bit. He's had success, short-term as it may have been. It's not necessarily long-term in any situation he's been, because that Seattle team, I mean, how I don't know how long he was coached there, but they had their rise, and then they fell apart, and then he moved on.
No, they were great. They were great. He left when they were still good.
Yeah.
That was, I mean, Seattle was my second team. I was heartbroken when they left, but yeah, they were a perennial playoff team, and they were a team that felt like they were the top 4 or 5 in the West every year. But his arguments with the front office just got to the point where they just said, never mind, we want you gone.
Right.
And then they fell apart. And even his other teams, Milwaukee, Denver, I mean, he was having great success in Denver, and then that thing just exploded instantly. Him and Majuri, they left at the same time, and that, you know, they were having success. They might not have been having success the way that the front office did, and that kind of reminds me of Thibodeau in Chicago, where,
yep,
yeah, you're having success, but we don't like how you're having success, so we're going to have a clash over it anyway. I think Sacramento is going to be the first team where it just doesn't work. I mean, if it does work, then Carl's one of the greatest coaches of all time. But I just think this is going to finally be his kryptonite. You know, some of the older coaches have success, but after a while, people just stop listening to their tune. And I think Sacramento is going to be Carl's kryptonite.
And let's, before I get it too far off topic, because I know you want to talk about more of the teams the Jazz are having to go up against for an eighth and final playoff spot, but that's one thing I've been stewing over for months now, is the NBA has passed those older coaches by already. I mean, George Karl's the last of a dying breed, and you look at the NBA, they're bringing in new coaches, they're bringing in new blood. They're bringing in, you know, a lot of this. I mean, we've talked about this on this show before, college coaches, new blood, new opportunities, guys that are more statistically, you know, analytics focused kind of coaches. George Karl doesn't fit that mold. And like you said, it may fall down upon him pretty quickly in Sacramento, and maybe it's time to move on and bring in a different situation, different person.
Yeah, but they move on every year.
Yeah. Yes, this
moves
is true.
On every year. So, and I won't say the door is closed on old coaches. You have Stan Van, he's reemployed. Alvin Gentry's a head coach again. They're still getting their opportunities. But the fad right now is towards the young, innovative, let's try something new coach.
Right. Right.
All right. Next Western team, I think the Jazz will be better than Portland.
But wait.
You lose Nick Batum, you lose Wes Matthews, you lose LaMarcus Aldridge. I think it's too much.
But wait, they did offer a diamond of a deal to Enes Kanter, although he got matched. I'm just kidding. I'm totally kidding. Throwing in stuff for fun. No, I agree. Portland
did the rest of the league a favor by offering that max deal, so OKC had to match.
But yes, Portland's horrible. In fact, Portland Jazz, would you agree, might be the second best team in their division this next year?
Behind Oklahoma, yeah.
Yeah. So.
Yep. Yeah, Portland, they're trying to patch it with some trades. They picked up Gerald Henderson, Mason Plumlee, Noah Vonleh, hoping that those guys with the change of scenery will be able to contribute. Vonleh had a really disappointing rookie year in Charlotte, so who knows? Maybe Portland will work out for him. I don't know. Mason Plumlee's got to be relieved to be out of Brooklyn. They'll have chances, but, you know, the talent they have coming in is just not enough to make up for what they've lost.
Which is unfortunate for Weber State star, former Weber State star Damian Lillard, because guy's got a promising career, and as long as he had the right pieces around him, had a bright future going on with him, and now I don't know, Devin.
He's already given up on basketball. That's how bad it's gotten in Portland. He's gone straight to putting out an album. I'm not sure if you guys saw that today.
I didn't.
He's dropping an official music, real music album. So, you know, maybe he's already got plans for retirement.
Which would be completely unfortunate, because that guy has got a hell of a bright future as a basketball star, and he's just in a bad situation, and they just signed him to, you know, an extension. Portland's gonna have to do something to keep him happy, or I hope he has a player option on that, because he could walk away from that at the end of his deal.
You know what I see happening is Portland is going to have a big dip. They'll recover a little bit, but I don't see them getting back to the threatening level in the West that they were at last year, 2 years ago. I just don't see them getting back there for a while. And when they do get back there, I'm not sure Dame's still going to be there, to be honest. That's my prediction in Portland. But I'm just glad the Blazers finally did it to someone besides the Jazz. You know?
Yeah. I don't think Portland's that big a disaster. I think a lot of people do like playing there. It's a smaller market, so there's not pressure. I think there will be a lottery team, but a lot of the money they have locked up is going to be free again next year, so they can try again next year at free agency when everyone has money. Terry Stotts is still a decent coach, so yeah, they'll be a lottery team, but they're not going to be this you know.
Oh,
sad
no.
Perennial dumpster fire like Sacramento.
Right. I don't think anyone can be Sacramento but Sacramento. Maybe Philadelphia. when it comes down to it, I think the Blazers are going to drop out, and they'll be back into the playoff picture, but I think they'll be, you know, the 7-6 is maybe the highest they'll climb for the next little while. I don't see them getting into the home court teams anytime soon.
John, I know you'll remember this. Devin, I'm not sure, not so much, but John, I know you will. But you remember way back in 2003, 2004, when the Jazz and Portland were talked about as the perennial playoff teams. The two of them had been to the playoffs, respectively. I think it was 19 and 20 years in a row.
Yep.
I mean, you know, that's 12 and a half years ago. How times have changed, because you had two teams that have always been in that same division that rivaled each other, went to the playoffs every year, 19, 20 straight years, and it's not been the same since then. It just hasn't. So
even then, the Jazz, I think they had a 2-year break from the playoffs.
When Carl left in 04, they did. Carl.
It was a 3-year break.
Yeah, something like that.
John and Carl left. Jazz went 42-40, but they were still ninth place. And then they went 26-56. And then the next year they were 41-41. I don't think they made the playoffs that year either.
No, they didn't.
They had a 3-year break, but it was a quick recovery. And this rebuilding around has been a slower recovery, but I think it's been a deeper recovery.
And it's being done right.
Yeah.
So, okay. So let's jump to your next team. I'm betting that you're going to go from Portland down to Texas, and we're going to talk about a team in blue.
Okay, I'll go to Dallas next.
Or were you going to go to Denver first?
No. It's just easier when they're alphabetically closer together, but I'm going to go over to the Dallas page.
I have taken John off of where he was going.
I'm not going to let you guess the next team.
Fine, be that
way.
All
right, Dallas. Dallas.
Darren Williams.
They were seventh place last year. And the reason they were as low as seventh place is because they made one of the worst midseason trades of the season. Rondo came over, personally destroyed that team's chemistry. Now he's gone. He has been replaced by Darren Williams. JJ Barea stays, but that's there still. I just don't see it.
Is
DeAndre Jordan really just kind of screwed them over when it came to what they could play for in free agency?
Now, who's? Let's go across the rest of their roster. Montellus, he left or stayed?
He's gone. Where did he go?
I don't remember.
He went to Indiana, didn't he?
Oh, Pacers. Yeah, he went to the Pacers.
Okay, so Ellis is gone. So, but you do have Wes Matthews, right?
Yep.
And then
they really have to hope that he somehow heals to where he's okay again. They are paying him like he's going to have a full recovery.
Yes.
And I was surprised they gave him that big of a pay bump.
And who plays in the front court alongside Nowitzki? Is it still? It's not still Tyson Chandler.
No, they got Zaza Pachulia.
Okay, that's right. So
and then yeah, Chandler went to the Suns.
Ah, that's right. Okay, so yeah, Dallas. I mean, if I'm looking at Dallas, if Deron Williams is even a mere shell of himself, you've gone and elongated Nowitzki's career just a little bit more, adding Deron Williams. But how much? I don't know. I don't even know whether Deron's going to even be a shell of himself in Dallas or not. It maybe does Deron revive his career? I don't know. Devin's over here shaking his head. I find reason to believe maybe Deron does a little bit.
They have to have better doctors than Brooklyn. And I would think that being out of there, Deron will play a little bit happier. All accounts are that he was just miserable the whole time he was in Brooklyn. But I keep going back to what Paul Pierce said about him, that he just didn't want to be a franchise player. He didn't want to put in the work to be an all-star, which was, you know, alarming. But if that's his personality and that's the kind of person he is, then okay, you got to deal with this new Deron Williams, this second phase where he's not trying to be the best point guard in the NBA. He's a guy that you would hope at least tries to win and happily concedes that Dirk's the best player on their team and just tries to contribute. I mean, you know, on paper, they look like they have a decent starting five with Deron Williams, Wes Matthews, Chandler Parsons, Dirk Nowitzki, and Zaza Pachulia. That's okay if everyone's healthy and playing. Your bench, though, drops off pretty quickly. I mean, they brought back Charlie Villanueva. They still have Richard Jefferson. You know, what are they doing? I mean, Jeremy Evans he's going to get time on their bench, but, you know, Evans was the 10th guy on the Jazz bench, and we were a lottery team. So and I'm now happy for Jeremy, but
yeah, now he's the 8th guy on a Dallas bench.
Yeah. So I'm not worried about Dallas making the playoffs next year. And I'm just going to go ahead and swing to the next team, which is Denver.
Wait, I wanted to guess.
No, I told you.
Okay.
We talked about this if you want to rewind. No. Denver. Okay, let's talk about Ty Lawson. Nuggets fans already wanted Ty Lawson out of town. And Nuggets were trying to find a deal that worked where they could get some value back for that. And 2 DUIs in 6 months, now it looks like the Nuggets are flirting with the idea of just waiving him, just eating all that money and just letting him go. And I'm inclined to think they probably should. Fan base doesn't like him. He's not good for the team. He's got some personal issues he needs to deal with. They have Emmanuel Mudiay, who's just looked like a stud. He looks like he is going to be, you know, it looks like Russell and Mudiay are going to be the new Chris Paul, Deron Williams. I mean, Mudiay's look great. I think Russell's going to really thrive in L.A. So they have their star there. Denver's going to try to unload, see what they can get for Gallinari and Fareed. Fareed's going to be a tough move. I think they would like to move on from Fareed. People like Gallinari, but, you know, that's why he has value, so they'll see what they can get from him there.
Yeah, I was going to say, The Gallinari move might actually tear apart Denver fans' hearts more than others will. I think Gallo has kind of endeared himself a little bit to the fan base, at least from what I gather. He's one of the fan favorites. So moving him might tear a few hearts out there.
Yeah, he had health issues, and I know a lot of them hated the way that Shaw used him. They were all thrilled to see Shaw go. It's kind of surprising that didn't work out. But now they have Mike Malone, and Mike Malone, he looked like he was actually going to bring success to Sacramento before that whole thing sadly blew up. So I'm happy for Malone to get that job there, and I think Malone will be able to do something with this team. I don't think it's going to be enough to be a winning team this year. But it's Denver. Once they can sort out their roster issues, I think they're going to be in good shape.
They still have Fournier playing on their team?
Evan Fournier?
Yeah.
Doesn't look like it.
I don't remember. Didn't they draft him and bring him in? He played like...
No, they traded him to the Magic, didn't they?
What I thought.
Okay, so he ended up with the Magic. That's one of those trades that passed me by that I didn't pay attention to. But
yeah, he was part of that Aflalo trade.
Oh, that's right.
They brought Aflalo back, and then Aflalo left a few months later, so it wound up being pointless.
That's right. Yeah, Denver's dropping back down in there. It's interesting watching the way Denver's been over the years. You had those stretches with Mutombo and... Oh, why am I forgetting? Wasn't it one of the Davis brothers? No. Back in the 90s, who played for them in the early 90s where they were really good, or decent, I should say, playoff team?
Mamouf, what was his name? Mamouf Rahim.
Yeah, but didn't they have, there was one of the brothers that played in the league at that time that was playing for them too. Oh my gosh. Anyway, they get these stretches like that where they're good, or really good when they have Melo, but then they drop off and drop back down into, you know, lottery for 4, 5, 6, 7 years, whatever it is, before they come back out again. And it seems that that's where they're at again. They're in that time to scratch it, start over again, see what we can do all over again.
Yeah, it's hard to say with Denver. I mean, everything was fine when they had Majuri and Carl, and you had people frustrated with how Carl was using his players, but, you know, it's hard to say. It's hard to have much faith in what they're doing. I think the Malone signing is a good signal. Moutier drafting is a good signal. I think they could go somewhere. And I think with the Mutombo team, maybe you're thinking of Dale Ellis or LaPhonso Ellis or any of those guys. McDyess was on those teams.
McDyess is the one I'm thinking of, but actually both of the Ellis's played on the team that time. And then they also had Greg Grant. Yeah, but McDyess was the one I was thinking of. I don't know why I was thinking something else. It was McDyess. And Jalen Rose played on that team back then too.
Yeah.
So
they might have drafted him. I'm trying to remember. Yep. Denver had an interesting team 18 years ago. All right. Next.
I'm not guessing.
Okay. I mentioned Moutier. The other one in the stud PGs next year is going to be Russell. So I'm now at the Lakers.
Ah.
Lakers, I think, are going to have a fun team in a different way that they were fun this past year. Lakers were fun this past year because they were so incredibly tragically bad that you couldn't help but just love Swaggy P going off and stealing the show and all the crazy people they signed up to get in on it. I mean, it was It was hilarious. This time around, they're going to have some actual serious new. They're going to have D'Angelo Russell. They're going to have Julius Randle. Kobe's going to be healthy. Who'd they get? They got Lou Williams, which was an interesting signing.
Getting him
from the Raptors. Brandon Bass is a decent pickup from the Celtics. I don't have much faith in them, you know, going far because Byron Scott's still their coach, but I could still see them being like a, you know, 32-34 win team, being semi-credible.
Even adding Roy Hibbert, does he add that much of an element for them?
Oh, that's right. Gosh, Hibbert's interesting.
Right?
I mean, Byron Scott's never been a fast-paced player, so Roy Hibbert's great for him there. And yeah, that whole defensive element, I forgot about him. Yeah, that's a very credible team they're going to be putting out next year.
It is. And, you know, not only do you get Swaggy P, and we know how Devin loves some swaggy love.
Yeah.
But then you've also got Ronnie P on that team, too. A couple of P's. Ronnie P.
Yeah.
So Jazz fans can remember that. But yeah, I had forgotten about Hibbert myself. So that's an element there that maybe changes them altogether. Okay. And if you're Byron Scott, okay, who's your starting power forward? Julius Randle or Carlos Boozer?
Boozer's gone.
According to their website, Boozer's still listed on their roster.
Boozer is a free agent, but I don't see his salary on there.
Okay, because I'm looking at the Lakers website roster. That's why I wondered.
He's still on there, but he hasn't signed anywhere. He's just kind of floating.
Hmm.
Interesting. Is no one going to pick up Boozer? Is his career already over? Someone will pick up Boozer. He'll get a job somewhere. Maybe he will go back to the Lakers.
Maybe he won't have a choice.
He still can contribute. He can still score and rebound, even if, you know, if you're a team that doesn't care about defense, then great. Or if you feel like you have enough good defensive players around him. I mean, Boozer, he could probably be more effective if he's got Hibbert next to him.
Yeah. He's got height with Hibbert. You can hide his, truthfully, having Hibbert on that team might be the best thing you could do for Boozer's defensive liabilities, because now you can hide them with Hibbert.
Well, the problem is, I'm going to go back to Byron Scott. He's not been a good defensive coach for a long time. His teams for the past few seasons have had bad defensive numbers. And so Hibbert is probably going to clean a lot of that up, but you know, it's not going to be the coach that makes Boozer a better defender.
Devin, did the Lakers make the playoffs?
No.
He's over. He's been vehemently shaking his head while you've been talking about the Lakers. So
I've been doing the stink face over here. As long as you got Kobe Bryant jacking up shots on a bad ankle, they're not making the playoffs. I don't think they get back into the playoffs until Kobe retires.
Yeah, I agree.
So they have pieces. Julius Randle could be a good player. I think D'Angelo Russell has a very bright future in this league and is going to take over Kobe's spot, you know, as the guy in LA. Hibbert's a nice piece, but I feel like we've seen this before where LA brings in talent and it just doesn't mesh. And I think they're going to run into that this season and it's going to fall apart the next season. And then they'll actually maybe start doing a true rebuild and bring in some guys after Randle and Russell have a couple years under their belt. That's what I see happening for the Lakers.
Do you know what this reminds me of, John? This reminds me of that Laker team in the 90s where Magic was on the team at the very tail end of his career. And
see, I was thinking that too, but like the Eldon Campbell, Nix Van Exel, Lakers team.
Yep, and it was before they picked up Shaq. It was before they drafted Kobe. before they drafted Fisher, you had an aging Magic Johnson, much like an aging Kobe Bryant. You had pieces that were good, and you're right, Nick Van Exel, good, and Eddie Jones, you know, very young Eddie Jones, who was up and coming and getting better. But it wasn't until they brought over Shaquille O'Neal from Orlando that things started to change. I mean, the year they played the Jazz in the playoffs in the finals, the Western Conference Finals, and the Jazz swept them, Kobe was still very much an unknown on that team. We didn't see a lot from him that year. So it has that feel from the early to mid 90s where it took them a little while to build. Magic had to retire and they had to go out and sign a big name, bring in a big name and build around them, and then go through their period of time.
Yeah, but the trouble is Lakers don't have the front office they used to, and
no,
we're seeing it's harder for them to attract free agents.
Yeah.
But yeah, once Russell and Randall prove that they're something and they start winning, then people will want to join them. They're just not going to make the playoffs this year.
See, I think what you have right now is kind of like what you had a couple of years ago. I mean, they brought in an all-star center in Dwight. Was Lynn on that team? Mm-hmm. You know, they brought in some guys. They brought in some talent, but they just couldn't put it together. And I'm biased, but I think Kobe Bryant at this point is not helping any with securing the future of the Lakers. He holds his place, in Lakers history. That's undeniable. But as far as helping them take the next step into the future, I don't know that Kobe can really help with that the way you want him to.
I think a lot of players are kind of waiting for him to retire so they can go to LA and be the next big thing. I think there's something to the fact that most players just don't want to play with him.
I would agree with that completely. I don't think we need to even address that any more than it is. No, it's true. Yeah. So right. Is that all of the teams, or are we missing any?
No, next team that I think Jazz will be better than, the Phoenix Suns.
All right.
Phoenix actually was a little bit better than Jazz this year, but I like the development of Utah, and the Phoenix roster is in flux. I mean, they accomplished everything they did with Goran Dragic. Dragic blows the thing up. They have to trade him. They've put all their money in Brandon Knight. Knight really became a thing in Milwaukee, and they traded for him. And he's a good player. Is he a franchise player? You know, how's the Knight Bledsoe thing going to work out?
But they picked up quite possibly the best shooter in the draft.
Yeah, they do have Booker. And I got to admit, once number 12 came, I was kind of hoping they'd take Booker. But, Phoenix got their shooter, and Hornacek's their coach. There's going to be a lot of shooting, but I just see too much flux going on with that roster. Marcus Morris is gone, so now let's see how the Morris twins do apart. They picked up Tyson Chandler, which, what does that say about Alex Len, that they're picking up Tyson Chandler? Chandler, I've been impressed. I mean, Chandler's getting up there in age, but I think he got a 4-year deal out of them.
Thing is he brings a defensive element at the center position, and that's a lot of the times one of the things that most teams will pay for is that defensive element. He won a championship with Dallas because he was quite possibly one of the best defensive centers in the league that year.
Yeah, but my big thing with Chandler is, he gonna stay healthy?
Right.
So, I've been impressed that his career's still going. I thought with his health issues that he's had earlier in his career that we'd probably start to see the decline. I would have guessed that he'd be retiring soon. But he was 18 when he got drafted, so it feels like he's been around forever. But what is he, 32 now? Yeah, he's still only 32, which just seems strange to me. but he's been in the NBA for 14 years. Let's see. He played 75 games last year, which was the most he's played since 2008. So, okay. If his health is able to stay there, then good. I just don't know if I want to pay a guy who's been in the NBA for 14 years to do a four-year deal. That seems kind of risky to me. Right. But maybe that's that NBA thing where you're paying for two good years and you just have to pay for the third and fourth year to get it.
Yeah. Okay, so that's if I'm counting right, that's six teams that you've named that the Jazz are better than, right?
Yep. So okay. Let's go to the next one. The Minnesota Timberwolves.
Yes, they're better than them.
In 2 years, that is going to be one frighteningly good team.
Yes, they will.
But for now, you know, they got Towns. Towns is going to be awesome. They are going to be much better this year than they were last year. But they were so bad last year. Now, I can see Minnesota getting over 30 wins this year. I think Towns really elevates them. I don't know what they're going to get out of Garnett on the court, but off the court, he looks like he's really going to get into this mentor role. And I know that he wants to eventually transition into some kind of front office deal with Minnesota once he does retire. They didn't lose much. They only lost Budinger and not Budinger. Did they lose Budinger? Well, this says, okay, I'm looking at a sheet that says they lost Budinger, but it says to the Wolves, so I don't know what this is. This site's kind of screwed up.
Literally, to the Wolves. They left him outside.
Yeah. All right, ESPN, you really let me down while I'm scrolling through here.
Well, they
had a ton of injuries, so those guys are all going to come back. There's a lot of reason to be happy with the Timberwolves this year. The Timberwolves this year is going to be like what the Jazz had last year. It's like, okay, we're coming off a really bad year. Now let's see improvement, and they're going to see improvement. And I think it's just going to trend up and up for them. But this coming year, Jazz are still going to be better.
Let me ask you this, because I was on Twitter a couple days ago having a conversation with Brad Pierce, one of our friends over at Holy Rivals. You can follow him at Utah Sports Bar. But he was talking about Ricky Rubio. Does Ricky Rubio put it all together? And my thoughts are that you're going to see a jump in Rubio, not to superstar or all-star levels, but you're going to see an improvement in his efficiency as they bring in a better team around him. I think you bring in Towns, that's going to help Rubio out.
With the exception of one problem, guy can't shoot the ball. He can't shoot the ball to save his life. That's the one area of efficiency in Rubio's game that I think we may just never see get better. He's worse than any of the Jazz point guards as far as shooting. Guy can't hit a shot. Am I right, John?
He had a really bad year. In fact, well, he only played 22 games, but he was shooting 25% from three.
Yeah.
Pitiful. He's never been that good a shooter, but they don't really need him to be a shooter as long as he has all the other weapons around him. I don't know. He's a point guard, and point guards tend to develop slowest, and maybe he could still break out, but he's 24. He's been in the NBA 4 years.
And he's played overseas in the Olympics. Yeah, he's the guy who's in FIBA forever. He's played basketball for so long, he knows how to play.
I'm just saying, you surround him with better players, you're going to see an improvement in his production. That's all I'm saying. I mean, I guess here's what I'm asking. Is Rubio your guy going forward, or are the Wolves going to be looking to upgrade that position sometime in the next 3-4 years?
No, it's going to be Rubio. They just committed to him. He got an extension. I know they drafted Tyus Jones, but Tyus Jones is not your future point guard. Tyus Jones, they hope, is going to be a good backup. We'll see. It is up to Rubio, and Rubio, he's a great passer, great ball handler. He's good on defense. He gets quite a few steals. So, you know, I'm okay with Rubio staying on that team and anchoring that team. He's not going to be the best player on the team. You at least hope he's not the best player on the team. But you have Andrew Wiggins, you have Towns. So as long as you have a guy who can get them the ball, that's all they need. And
don't forget, you know, don't forget they have Shabazz.
You know,
Muhammad,
he could turn into something.
Yeah, well, I liked him before he went down with injury. He's got, well, and like you said, that team can be scary, scary good. They have a lot of talent at multiple positions on that team. The only caveat, they've got to find the right mix with a coach. And that's, they can be, they have all the makings to be crazy, scary good, but it's going to depend on their coaching, really. I mean, I think that's what it's going to come down to, because you have athletes, you have talent, you have, that's probably one of the most loaded young teams, really young, loaded type of talented teams, but they don't have the right kind of mentor yet.
And, well, we'll see. I mean, I thought, you know, I didn't think Flip had much to work with, but man, when you coach the worst team in the NBA,
yeah,
you got to do some soul searching. But if everyone comes back healthy and he has this much talent, and, you know, quite honestly, I mean, the Jazz traded Gorgui Dieng and Shabazz Muhammad for Trey Burke, and I'm really rooting for Trey to have a good third year so it doesn't look like a bad trade, because right now it looks like it was a bad trade. It looks like we should have just kept those two players.
Right.
But, you know, if Trey can turn it around and improve, then everything's okay again.
Well, and Brett Austin, A24 Brett on Twitter, brought this up the other day. He questioned me, and I told him no, but he said if you could, you know, straight across trade, nothing else involved, just move Dieng and Muhammad, Shabazz Muhammad, for Gobert and who did he say? I think he said Gobert and Burke. Would you do
no.
it?
No.
And I said, there's no way. I said, because Gobert is going to be the best center in the league in the next 3 to 5 years, likely to be the best center in the league, which he called my statement bold. But I told him, I like Shabazz. I like Dieng, but I like Gobert that much better. That half of that trade right there, if you were to drop Trey Burke, I understand that. I've been a Trey Burke apologist, but that half of the trade with Gobert is the one reason why I don't make that move for any reason. Because Gobert is going to be that good.
Gobert is like the most important asset on the team right now.
I would have to almost
completely
agree with that.
I have all the faith in the world in Gobert turning into just a stud player. And I find it funny people even flirt with trade Rudy scenarios. That's...
And people can call my statement bold all they want, but I'll tell you, in the end, Gobert is likely to be the top center in the league.
Top center in the league. Bold statement.
He's already
hot take cannon.
He's already that good defensively. You add offensive game to that guy, and there's going to be teams clamoring to sign him when he's a free agent.
Yeah, he's awesome. I keep saying, if he can develop an outside shot, he's one of the 10 best players in the league.
Agreed. Okay, who's the other team?
I hit 7, didn't I?
Yes, which puts...
You only need to be better than 7, and you're in the playoffs.
All right, there you go then. You're the 8th seed.
Yep.
Now... I mean, we could have a whole different conversation about this later, and we're going to have to, because I know we've been doing this for a while this evening, but I would love to look at some of the other teams the Jazz will be fighting in that 8th seed for and wonder if they're going to be better than some of those teams, like the Pelicans the Pelicans is the first team that comes to mind. Are the Jazz better than the Pelicans? I don't know that they are yet, but can they be?
Well, I look at the Pelicans this way. They made the playoffs last year, and they upgraded their coach.
Yes.
So,
and they signed their star player to the biggest contract in NBA history.
Deservedly so.
Absolutely.
And Oklahoma City, you got to figure that Durant and Westbrook are healthy and all the other pieces just don't matter. If those two guys are there, they're a playoff team. And they had a good draft. I mean, they got Cameron Payne for 14. So you get rid of the head case of Reggie Jackson. You have your decent backup point guard you can develop. They have a ton of big men. I know they just re-signed Cantor to the max, and that's going to hurt them down the road. But when they play Cantor with Ibaka, that, you know, that helps negate a lot of his defensive issues. So,
yep,
they're going to be a good team.
Okay, so I think that pretty much covers. I don't know if that covers everything you wanted to talk about, but I want to address two questions that came out on Twitter tonight really quickly before we close.
Oh, yes. Twitter questions.
Yes. Clint Peterson asks, how many barrels of oil are on the top of Donald's head?
Two.
Two.
I looked it up. It's a fact.
Okay, there you go.
Huge barrels of oil on his hair. Huge.
Clintonite 33. There you go, Clint. Your answer is two. He looked it up. It's verified. It's two. Okay. And Amar, did you see the picture that Amar was talking about?
Yeah.
I retweeted it earlier today. So
yeah.
So he wants us to discuss the Amy Schumer picture of her in bed with R2-D2 and C-3PO.
I thought it was a delightful homage, whatever you say. I'm looking forward to her new movie. And Slave Leia is one of my favorite things I've ever seen in a movie of all time. So there you go.
All right, then. And I don't care. And I don't care about the man in Florida who complains with his daughters about the fact that Slave Leia Black Series is an offensive new toy.
That is such a joke. Context, people.
I told
she was a prisoner and she later killed him for it. So what's the problem?
Well, and the one thing they interviewed him, he told him, he says, it's not good to have it on the shelf when my daughter looks at it and says, what's that around her neck? And my response to my wife when I told her about the story is this: dude, you're not a true Star Wars fan or a Star Wars father if your daughter's asking that question. So therefore, any arguments you have for that Black Series toy are completely irrelevant. Because if you're a Star Wars fan and if your daughter has seen the movie, she won't even ask what that's around her neck. And you won't be embarrassed to tell her because she's already seen it.
And if you haven't seen it, you just explain that she was a prisoner and she eventually used that ching to choke Jabba the Hutt to death.
Yeah. That whole story is a joke.
People.
Right?
That's like a local news story, just kind of looking for something, anything to talk about.
Pretty much. And it's sad. It's in Pennsylvania. Come on, guys. Seriously.
Let's boil down the story. Parent complains about toy. Okay, whatever. Parent complains about toy that the vast majority of parents have no problems with because they're sane.
And most of us, when we were kids and saw that movie, I dare say she was on our crush list. So enough said.
I had that figure. My mom bought me that figure when I was 9. You know, I had 100 Star Wars figures. And my mom was very much how do I phrase this?
Prude?
Yeah, prude. She didn't have a problem with it. I mean, she wouldn't buy me most of the He-Man villains because she thought they looked too satanic. But she didn't have a problem with any of the Star Wars figures.
All I got to say is she was my first crush. Seriously, Slave Leia was one of my first crushes as a kid. I'm sorry, dude. Don't complain about your kids. You're just trying to hide the fact that you're embarrassed even looking at it on the shelf. Anyway, I'm done. I'm not going to go off on it because it's ridiculous. All right.
Okay.
All right. Anything else?
No, that's a fine way to end this show.
That's fantastic. Okay. All right, everybody. That's it. We've talked about awesome things tonight, and it was a good show. And yes, go watch Ant-Man this weekend, everybody, because it's awesome. So thanks, everybody, for joining us for another episode of Jedi and Germs on the Jazz. You can find us on iTunes and Stitcher, Jedi and Germs on the Jazz. Easy to find. Also on Twitter, at Jedi and Germs. It's run by the locally unpaid intern. And I'm going to continue to use that because it's hilarious. You can find us at Germs Guy, at Jedi Zog, and our producer, the wonderful Devin Masters, at Torn by Devin on Twitter. Let us know what you think. Please continue to give us, you know, things to talk about. Like, you can ask questions like we had tonight, because we're not afraid to talk about them on the show. Doesn't matter what they are. So thanks for joining us. Thanks for listening. Have a great week. John, take us out.
Jabba
the Hutt.
There you go.